Into hour two tonight on the Infinity Sports Network, Gresham for JR tonight. We start in hour one talking about how Jerry Jones really is the biggest ego in sports. He even trumps Deion Sanders, and I love to dump on Deion, the Coach Prime, the wrestling gimmick, who is the leader of the Colorado Buffaloes. And speaking of college football, arguably the biggest week one we have ever had in the old history of the game, so to speak, where we have number one against number three, number four against number nine, and number six against number 10. We also have a very interesting start tomorrow for Alabama, number eight team in the country at Florida State. We got Virginia Tech and South Carolina on Sunday. That game's going to be played in Atlanta. But I know the eyes of the football world, Saturday at noon, which is, oh, gosh. Is there anything better than the big game being on Saturday at noon? I don't have to wait till prime time. It doesn't get moved to a Sunday. Give me big games at noon. Thank you very much. Texas is at Ohio State. It's just the second top three matchup in AP poll history to be a season opener for both teams. The last time this happened, you got to go all the way back to 2017 when number one Alabama hosted number three Florida State and they won 24-7. So this is, yes, it's Ohio State. We know how good they are. We'll hear from Ryan Day in a moment. But this really is the coming out party for Arch Manning, is it not? Arch Manning has sat 2 years, waited for his opportunity. He knew it was going to come. I love the fact that Arch Manning had a plan and he stuck to it. And yes, Sark, you know, found ways to get him in the lineup last year and make sure he at least got him some game experience. But I love the fact that in an era where, you know, the fourth string quarterback at Clemson will end up at UMass because it's just a place to play, that Arch Manning didn't bail out, go to another school. He could have cut a huge NIL deal. It feels like with Arch Manning, it's been about the football. But what a big test for Texas. The number one team in the country. They're playing Ohio State. Here is Steve Sarkisian on facing OSU.
Obviously a heck of a challenge. Very good football team. Tough environment to play in. But all those things are why you're here, right? This is why we're at Texas, is to play in games like this. And, you know, we've been fortunate. We've been exposed to games like this in the past. And I think we've got some history and some leadership in our locker room to lean into.
And that's what I think Texas kind of has going for them, is that they've got leadership. And I really do think they have a dude in Arch. I do think Arch Manning is a dude. He will get people to rally around him. You know, this is, this is one of those games now where losing at the beginning of the year was damn near a death blow in trying to get into the old just four-team playoff. Now that we're at a 12-team playoff, if you're Texas or Ohio State, and you lose this game opening weekend, it doesn't necessarily mean you can't make the playoff and still get to where you want to be at the end of the year, but you're also playing a good team in a very tough game. And in fact, if you go by the playoff predictor that is out there, if Texas's current percentage of chance to make the college football playoff is 87%. Ohio State is at 69% just to make it. With a win, Texas jumps up to 95. Ohio State jumps to 82%. If Texas loses, they're still 78% to make the playoff, whereas if Ohio State loses, they're 57% to make the playoff, and that's from that All-State playoff predictor. And Texas is the preseason AP number one for the first time in program history. They were number one in the first poll in 1946, but there was no preseason poll then. So all the pressure is on Texas, and they have been 1-9 against AP top five opponents since 2011. Now, the lone win did come on the road at Alabama in September of 2023. So we're looking at the Sark era there. So just to kind of, you know, draw the line in the sand just in terms of how long Sark is being there, that overall record goes back to 2011. That's got nothing to do with Arch Manning playing in this game. Now, few challenges like this for Ohio State, but they have won 25 straight openers. And there's two guys I'm going to have my eye on. One is Arch Manning for Texas, and the other is Jeremiah Smith of Ohio State. He's back for his sophomore year. Last year, as a freshman, a real freshman, only 76 receptions, 1,315 receiving yards, and 15 touchdowns. The only person who touched those numbers were Michael Crabtree. And think of him, what you want at the pro level. Those are still pretty impressive numbers, top to bottom. So noon in Columbus, we get Texas and Ohio State when the could be the coming out party. I mean, you know what's crazy? This opening game could be the Heisman moment for Arch Manning. If Texas plays great and, you know, he throws for 400 yards or whatever it is and four touchdowns, there'll be a lot of people who will be ready to hand him the Heisman Trophy in short order. So LSU is going to play at Clemson. That's going to be on Saturday night at 7:30. It's the fifth time these teams have met and the first regular season meeting. LSU is, they're 3-1 in the series between these two programs. Brian Kelly has been meh in AP top 10 matchups as an FBS head coach, 3-10 in those situations. This will be the first time LSU plays in an AP top 10 matchup on the road since 2019. Kelly is 7-18 against AP top 10 teams, including 3-4 at LSU. Clemson, I keep wanting to say the college football announcer Cole Kubelik or whatever. I get that and Cade Klubnik, the Clemson quarterback, confused. I don't know why. It's just a brain fart thing. But this guy is heading into, it's his fourth year, I'll just go senior year, at Clemson. And the guy had over 4,100 total yards last year, sixth most in Clemson history. When you think about that, you know, Deshaun Watson's icky and creepy now. But when you think of Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence, that's a pretty good quarterbacks who put up some good numbers there at Clemson, nevertheless. Klubnik went 9-4 as the starter, but wasn't great. Total QBR of 55, which ranked 11th out of 12 qualified ACC quarterbacks. So that's not great, to say the least. And these teams just really have bowl history. 1959, 1996, 2012 Chick-fil-A Bowl. The national championship season, LSU did beat Clemson there. So that's a pretty big one, to say the least. So that is the that is really the second biggest game on the schedule, that the LSU Clemson. And then I totally admit I do not know what to expect from the Miami Hurricanes. Now, Notre Dame, very impressive under Marcus Freeman. When Marcus Freeman got that job, I've admitted I was one of those people who kind of chuckled and was like, he'll be out of there in a couple years. Nope. That guy's been great running that program. But you're throwing Carson Beck on a Miami team who, think about this. Normally, when you have the number one overall pick in the draft and you have that guy at quarterback, you kind of have a special season. Miami had a good season. Last year was not a special season. And they still have the number one overall pick in Cam Ward. So if Carson Beck plays great, if he plays the way Cam Ward did last year, what version of the Miami Hurricanes am I getting if there is a number one overall pick talent on that team at quarterback? Because last year, it didn't materialize itself in a way, in a team win standpoint, even though you had this really good quarterback. Mario Cristobal is the head coach of Miami. He says Beck has had a great camp.
Carson, of course, has been in a bunch of those, so he has had a great camp. He is, he doesn't stop preparing like the rest of the team. The culture fit has been perfect. So we're just really all his focus is on preparation.
Yeah, I when you think about traditionally in college football, and you have the player who is the number one overall pick in the draft, you've normally, or you would think, you would have a chance to have a really special season. Miami did not have that last year. And if they get really good quarterback play again, what's that really going to look like at Miami? Now, Notre Dame went into the transfer portal this season. They added 8 players. Now, I know that's tied for 4th fewest because you had to exclude the service academies in that, which they do. But it's not so much the you only got 8 players. It's who were the 8 players? You know, are you just bringing in a disgruntled backup tackle that you recruited who didn't like being second string somewhere else? Or are you bringing in a high-level FCS veteran transfer senior that's going to come in and start on your offensive line? You don't have to, you know, your shopping cart doesn't have to be full to make a great dinner. And when you look at 3 of these first-year transfers that are projected to start for the Fighting Irish, Malachi Fields from Virginia, nickelback Devonta Smith from Alabama, and defensive back Jalen Stroman from Virginia Tech. And you look at last year, Notre Dame got 20% of their starters or starts from transfers, over 3 times higher than during Marcus Freeman's first season. You don't have to have a lot. You don't have to add a lot of guys to add the right guys. And that has been a part of the deal under Marcus Freeman. Now, when you think about Notre Dame and Miami over the past 8 seasons, they have signed a lot of high-level talent. You know, when you look at the top 300 recruits, and you see that over the last 4 classes, Miami has signed 48 of those top 300, Notre Dame 47 of the top 300 over the past 4 classes. So that's really out of 1,200 players when you look at it. And nearly half of Miami's roster comes from the state of Florida. You would think there would be some pretty high-end athletes on this Miami roster. You know what these two teams have are tons of legacy players. So dads or uncles or a connection somewhere where the dad played for the team, like Jerome Bettis and his son Jerome Jr. are Fighting Irish. Bryant Young, remember him of the 49ers? His son Bryce Young playing for Notre Dame. You know, Selwyn Brown, who played in the NFL, his son Damari. Joaquin Gonzalez, who played from 98 to 01. His son Vinny is on the roster. And that's normally a pretty good way to build your football team, too, is to look at a little lineage and history of, can I get some good bloodlines? And some people who understand the culture of the school, because maybe they were around it as a kid, or dad played there and, you know, you were around, or dad took you back every year, whatever in the world it was. So I can understand definitely going with the kids and people who have who can help you with culture. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. We'll do some college football next with Bill Bender of the Sporting News. So I kind of gave you the big three preview. We'll hit the rest with Bill Bender next with Gresh and for JR on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief. Here's Gresh.
Gresh and for JR tonight on the Infinity Sports Network. Big, big games with big stakes in college football this weekend. Joining me now to break it all down, Bill Bender of the Sporting News, senior writer. Bill, I see by your Twitter it says Columbus, Ohio. What does it feel like the night before the big game here in the belly of the beast of Columbus?
Oh, it'll be exciting. You know, I can't remember a non-conference game like this since last time Texas came in here. You know, Oklahoma with Baker was huge. But that game 20 years ago with Vince Young and threw the late touchdown to Lima Swede. And, you know, here you are, 1-3, Arch Manning, Jeremiah Smith. It's crazy to me that you have 32 players that played in this game last year that are in NFL camps, you know, and it seems like this is just as star-studded as it was with all the NFL talent on the field on Saturday.
Bill, I know I wouldn't ask it in a way of can Arch Manning win the Heisman in this game, but how pivotal could this game be to a Heisman campaign for Arch Manning?
Well, I think the last guy that won it in week one was probably Robert Griffith III. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you remember that game, and then he just took off from there. It would be a springboard, but I don't look at this game in that way for him. I think long-term expectations for Arch Manning, I think he's going to live up to them. He's going to be great. I don't know if he'll win the Heisman or a national title. You know, his uncle Peyton didn't win the Heisman and didn't win the national title and did just fine, you know? So I think when you bet on him long-term, that's great. I actually think the guy with a little more pressure short-term is probably Julian Sand. New quarterback following Will Howard. Three of the four guys before that were first-round picks. That is to me, and you can tell me I'm wrong, but because I live in the bubble here, but I just think being the quarterback at Ohio State comes with more pressure than any other position in college football.
Bill, what are people in the bubble saying about Julian Sand?
Well, I mean, Brandon Ennis, receiver at practice the other night, said, you know, you see the difference after he was named the starter. You know, and a little more confidence in the huddle. Gets the ball out quick, accurate. It was funny to me. I kind of chuckled. Sarkisian and Ryan Day basically said the same thing about the other team's quarterback. You know, athletic, fast, quick release. It was like, man, the coach speak is out here with these guys. But they were both complimentary of the other guy. And I think because both of these guys have a five-star background and young quarterbacks against tough defenses, it might take a minute for him to settle in. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Bill, when you look at LSU and Clemson, what is the storyline or what will you be keeping your eye on in that game?
How does LSU handle that Clemson defensive front? Peter Woods and TJ Parker, how do they handle the whole Death Valley thing? And then Klubnik and Nussmeier. I think a lot of NFL fans are going to tune into that because Klubnik and Nussmeier have that kind of first-round attachment to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, it's does LSU finally win an opener in 5 years? Can you go out there and avoid one of those moments we're all talking about the next day with Brian Kelly? I think there's a ton of pressure on LSU in this game, but I do think it's going to be close. I see this as a field goal game either way.
Bill, you got Notre Dame at Miami, and that's on Sunday night, 7:30 on ABC. You know, I said this before you came on. Normally when you have a quarterback who is number one NFL draft overall worthy, you kind of have a special season because you have that guy who is the makes the big impact. Miami had a nice year with Cam Ward, but they didn't have a special year. If Carson Beck plays anywhere near like Cam Ward, is Miami better ready to take advantage of a year like that when they fell short last season?
I think so. And this Cam Ward and Carson Beck, completely different players. You know, Cam Ward, great improvise. I just go back to that Cal comeback last year. Great player. Carson Beck, more in a lot of big games, 24-3 as starter. No, at ACC kickoff, Mario Cristobal was very complimentary of what he believes that Carson Beck's going to bring to them. You know, he said he marries what we do offensively well with what we want to accomplish. Shannon Dawson likes him a lot. There's a leadership quotient to that, too. And you know, everybody says all the right things at media days. I understand that. But, you know, that experience will pay off in this big game environment. I mean, for me, it's really how does DJ Carr settle in Miami? Now, I've said this all week. I went to a Catholic school. I know the history there. Notre Dame's lost six straight games in Miami. I remember the Jerry Faust game, strangely, you know, like when Jimmy ran it up on him. So vaguely, I was a small little kid. But I definitely remember the game 8 years ago that I was at where Miami put one on them real quick.
Bill Bender of the Sporting News talking college football with Gresh, who's in for JR here on the Infinity Sports Network. Bill, maybe I'm dead just so wrong on this. There's something about Kalen DeBoer and Alabama that to me just doesn't seem like that's a right fit. How important is a nice-looking win against a team that has really not been good the last couple of years in Florida State? Is it necessary at Alabama so the people don't start, you know, looking for rumors of Coach Saban wanting to come back?
Huge game for both coaches. You know, for Kalen DeBoer, he's guy after the guy. I think he's a fantastic coach. Took Washington to a national championship game just 2 years ago. But, you know, to your point, it was a fit, and it's really hard being that guy. I had to look it up yesterday. I was on another show, and you know, I had to look up who replaced John Wooden. I didn't know it was Gene Bartow, and you know why? He was only there 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something to consider with Kalen. You know, they have to play better on the road. That's what's on the line for them. Florida mm-hmm. State coming off 2-10. If they get hammered tomorrow, it will be bad, because that to me, that's a program game for them. They don't have to win, but they can't let Alabama come in there and beat them by 40. And I think that would be really ugly for Florida State if that happened.
If Florida State ends up making a move, is it lock, stock, and barrel they make a big run at Deion Sanders?
Well, I don't know. I'm fascinated to see what Gus Malzahn does with this offense, mm-hmm. if they have success there. Deion, I mean, I'm excited to watch tonight. You know, I'm so happy he's healthy. You know, I had my dad. So, like, anybody that recovers from that, it means something to me. And, you know, I'm really happy for Deion, and I want to see him continue to coach and be healthy. I think he's great for college football. I you know, obviously if Norvell goes, that rumor is going to start popping up because of, that's where he went to school, and his sons are in the professional football now. So it'd be fun. There's no question.
Is there another team, Bill, that is maybe, you know, ranked 15th or lower that you're going to pay special attention to this weekend?
In the later windows. Well, here, I'll give you a couple that aren't really ranked that I'm keeping an eye on these. Might be second TV games. I got the second TV in there. Michigan and Oklahoma. They're going to win tomorrow, but I want to see Mateer at Oklahoma and Bryce Underwood at Michigan. And that's really the big meal in week two with Michigan going down to Norman. And then late night, I'm really fascinated to see UCLA, Utah. Utah with Devin Dampier. Are they a Big 12 contender? UCLA with Nico Iamaliava after everything that happened in the spring. 2-5-7 teams last year. Old Pac-12 game ought to be a good one. That one I'll definitely have my eye on in the late window.
Bill, just one other thing. You mentioned Oklahoma. Have you seen that, the coach's press conference was at one time sacred. Now at the University of Oklahoma, you can purchase the experience of going to the coach's post-game press conference for someone who has seen a lot of stops in college football and been in a lot of those press conferences. I'm curious for your thoughts of Oklahoma sort of opening up the curtain for, Uncle Chucky to try to slide in a question at the press conference.
Yeah, they're going to need that, like, glass window that you have, like, in the limo.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like you're with the Penguins.
Yeah, you're going to pull that down, man, because I can only imagine. I go back to last year going into the Ohio State press conference after they lost to Michigan. I couldn't imagine letting fans in for that in any circumstance. So,
especially
after tough loss.
Yeah, I wonder if the $600 per person that the people or the folks in Oklahoma are paying is ultimately worth it. Bill Bender, you can read him in the Sporting News, and you can find him on Twitter or X, BillBender92. Bill, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. Good breakdown. Fun chat. Hopefully we get to do it again soon. Thanks.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Yes. Can you imagine at the unit, and I'm sure they're going to tell all these people, right? I'm sure they're going to tell all these people, hey, listen, you can go in there and you can listen. You know, you're not in there to ask a question or anything like that. But come on now. Don't you know that or can't you just see? I guess I'll put it this way. You know, here comes old Buckshot Calvert. Now, I know that was a guy who played quarterback at Liberty because it did his game, but I still think it's mad funny. You know, old Buckshot Calvert, after having a couple of Sooner Wisers during the game, and then the next thing you know, he can't help himself. Like, his wife's, like, trying to hold his hand down from asking a question. And then the old ball coach points at that guy. Hey, coach, today's greatest day of my life. Got to be here. Ask your question. I just want to know, do you have the big old gonads to run it big against State? I just need to know. Coach, I love you. Come on now. You know there's going to be some hayseed that's going to get in that thing. I love it when Bill Bender said he got to get the plexiglass up so that they turn into, like, you know, window lickers or something like that, pushing their face up against there. I got your coach is saying. I did not realize until recently that everything at Oklahoma was that up for sale to where you can go to the coach's press conference. Couldn't you only imagine if they could, if Met fans could pay to go to a Carlos Mendoza press conference? Good Lord, what would that look like? Although right now it'd be good because the Mets have turned it up and turned it around. In fact, with all the latest and everything going on in the world of sports, time to get an update. Here's Pete McCarthy.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief. Here's Gresh.
This NASCAR race preview is sponsored by WeatherGuard Truck and Van Equipment. They're just as driven as the hard-working pros they serve. Well, it is the first week of the NASCAR playoffs. They had the cutoff last weekend in Daytona. So NASCAR heads to Darlington for the prestigious Southern 500. This year it's done sponsored by Cookout. The Cookout Southern 500 is one of the sport's most iconic and challenging races, because when you look at these massive super speedways, you look at some of the improvements that have been done in places like Nashville and elsewhere. Did they repave in Atlanta? I want to say they may have. Darlington is bumpity bump bump bump. Old track. God, a lot of just old school NASCAR there. There's a lot of the way people romanticize about baseball, you would romanticize about racing at Darlington. Well, the action begins Friday with the Truck Series practice and qualifying, and then continues Saturday morning with Cup Series practice and qualifying. Culminates Sunday at 6 Eastern with the main event in the NASCAR Cup Series broadcast on USA Network. Now, Darlington has this egg-shaped layout, so even the guys who've run there 100 times, it can grate on everybody. Now, Frankie Muniz, who's a good name but not having a great year in the Truck Series, he's going to miss because he broke his wrist from a ladder fall at home. I was not as up as probably I needed to be, just on the whole, everything that's going on this weekend, but. It was the cutoff last weekend, and Alex Bowman ended up staying in the top 16, so he's moving on. You got all the winners that have moved on. The most interesting guy in this NASCAR sort of playoff Cup Series here is Shane Van Gisbergen. Now, he's an Aussie import, as you know. He was a rally car racer. So when it comes to the street courses, where it's not just an oval or a super speedway, when you get on the road courses where it's left and right turns, I know people love to make the joke, but there very much is something to what that guy learned in driving rally car over in Australia, to where he understands how to ride the clutch, not kill the brake, and be able to maintain speed in corners of the track where not every NASCAR driver has been able to figure it out. So when you look at some of the, and there are some guys who have always been NASCAR drivers, like an AJ Allmendinger, but their specialty was the road course, right? So there would be those guys. But this dude, Van Gisbergen, he, if it's a road course, he's winning it. And I know they're throwing him in there, and they're talking about throwing more road courses into the final couple of races here on the in terms of the quest for the NASCAR championship, because they get down to that final four, and then final race of the year, all bets are off. Whomever's the highest finisher, you're the one that's winning. If you win the race, it's even better. But Van Gisbergen is a guy who has dominated road courses this year and has been very good and competitive, and is also on a strong team who has other playoff drivers as well. So that always, that's a lot of people think it's just, some guy gets in a car and he drives really fast, 150 miles an hour or whatever. No, it's not that easy. There is a team element to it. There's a strategy element to it. If you end up throwing in a little bit of weather, maybe you get more aggressive before you think the weather comes, because they might just call the race and you want to be in the lead. Or maybe you kind of wait back knowing that some weather's going to come, and, you make sure you tweak and get your car right and maybe have a couple pit stops or something like that to be able to kind of fight after weather. There's all different kinds of things that tire strategy, how much tires do you have left? How long can you run them? How long can you be competitive while running on older tires? There's a lot more that goes into it than people think. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. So every once in a while, I'll for funsies, just do a Google search of something that I might be talking about on the air. And I mentioned something about, Jerry Jones being the biggest egomaniac right now in sports. So I went to the Google. I know some people go to like ChatGPT for stuff like this. And I just typed in sports biggest egos. Okay? Sports biggest egos. And the list is pretty interesting because to me, Jerry Jones is out of control. Ego is very much right up here with a lot of these guys. Now, this dude, while admittedly a really good boxer, is also a world-class promoter. Some would argue he's a world-class jackass. But when you think of ego, boy, he loves himself, doesn't he? Floyd Mayweather Jr. Is Jerry Jones and his ego at the level of a Floyd Mayweather Jr.? I let you ponder. Here's another one that was thrown on the list from Google. Kobe Bryant says famously clashing with teammates and coaches due to his perceived star power. Or the guy really wanted to win and kind of didn't know how to control it. But I feel like Kobe's ego... I feel like Floyd's ego is closer to Jerry's in that they're almost delusional. Whereas with Kobe, he was delusional about winning. Therefore, people said he had a massive ego. Now, the next guy, LeBron James, a lot of people think he has a massive ego because 17 years ago or whatever it was, he decided to make his decision. And a lot of people didn't like it and thought that it was egotistical, taking my talents to South Beach, calling himself the king, all that kind of stuff. Here's the thing, though. LeBron backs it up. Now, you can argue Mayweather backs it up, and Jerry doesn't. But, you know, LeBron backs it up, especially when it comes to the ego stuff. And I don't think he's as bad as people say he is. Now, here's a real polarizing guy. Who at one point in time, his ego led him to believe he was above practice, and that was Allen Iverson. But when I sit here tonight in front of a microphone to talk to you, America, on the Infinity Sports Network, I still sit here believing the biggest ego in sports is Jerry Jones. Because he's got a right to have an ego. He's a multi-billion-dollar businessman who runs one of the biggest brand names in the biggest brand name sport in the United States right now, where it's effectively producing billions of dollars. Okay? So I get that part of it. But when you think your presence around the star of the Cowboys is bigger and more important than a arguably once-in-a-generation type player. I didn't think Micah Parsons would be this good. I really didn't. I thought he'd be good. I didn't realize he would be holy bleep first couple of years in the NFL good, all right? But this is where it's gotten to now with Jerry Jones. And I am 1,000,000% convinced that while Jerry Jones is a business of sports Hall of Famer, he wants to die a football guy. And the way to do that is to build his own Super Bowl team, to build his own winner. And this guy's quest and zeal to try to prove to everyone that he is a football guy has now taken his ego places to where the owner, the egomaniacal side of Jerry Jones on the owner end, is now hurting the general manager, Jerry Jones, and the owner is taking over the GM side of the brain of Jerry Jones, whatever that was, and is now telling him and convincing him, and, you know, that side is leaning in on the whole, hey, yeah, you did the right thing. You held firm the line. You thought you had to deal with this guy. F his agent. Because I really do think that was a part of this too, sadly for Jerry Jones. So at the end of the day, if you're a Cowboy fan, you've learned that your owner thinks he is more important than the players. You now have to try to convince yourself your team's going to be good without a all league level defender and a guy that you probably emotionally invested in, Micah Parsons, and sit through yet another season while Jerry Jones is trying to sell you the hope of draft picks of a team that you very much could see for years and years to come. They didn't trade him to, you know, New York or the AFC to get him away from Dallas. Dallas fans, unfortunately, are going to have to hope that Jerry is right. And there is still the chance the Micah Parsons could still wreak havoc on your football team. Jerry Jones, biggest ego in sports. Your thoughts at 888-710-4ISN.